This is Indie Book Publishing. Indie Book Publishing is a show about new books and the authors who wrote them. It's an opportunity for prospective readers to hear directly from the writers, to hear what inspired them to write and publish, and to hear all the inside details about their books. And now, Indie Book Publishing with your host, Steve Jorgensen.
The title of the book, My Journal, My Friend, A Journey of Self-Discovery and Inspiration. And the author is Kelly Lee Jackson and co-contributor Caroline Schar. They both join us now on Indie Book Publishing, this special interview brought to you by Balboa Press. Hello, Kelly Lee.
Hello, Steve.
Hi, Carolyn.
Hi, Steve.
Well, this is great not only to have you with us to explain the benefits of having a journal and your great guidance for young people and hopefully families get involved as well. And we're all brought together all the way. We're bringing Texas and Australia together.
We are.
Absolutely.
The magic of technology, and it's wonderful. So let me read a couple things that have been written about the book. And so everyone understands the focus that you have so skillfully accomplished. You say this: My Journal, My Friend, A Journey of Self-Discovery and Inspiration is a guided journal that will help you take control of your life and claim responsibility for your own choices, to feel empowered by your ability to choose. Writing down your innermost thoughts and emotions helps you to express your feelings and to figure things out. And boy, that is a big, big challenge to figure things out, especially when you're a teenager, right?
That's right, yes.
Absolutely.
Kelly Lee, why don't we start with you? Tell us a little bit about you, your background, and why you decided to write the book, and then we'll bring Carol in to do the same. Go ahead, Kelly Lee.
I'm an at-home mum and a wife of, and I've got three children. And I guess our children and the experiences of our own childhood actually inspired us to create this journal. And what we're hoping is that we're hoping to ease the confusion and anxiety and the general challenges that are related to being a teenager. And what we really wanted to do was to reach out to teens who feel as we did, those that feel awkward or unconfident, bullied and frustrated, and empower them to take control of their life through their own choices. We hope to give them the self-confidence necessary to be able to cope with the ups and downs of life by changing the way that they view and they respond to the challenges that life inevitably delivers, and enabling them to thrive and become well-balanced individuals, to be their best selves. And I guess Caroline and I, we wholeheartedly believe in the practice of journaling because we know firsthand that it helped us. We were able to escape the downward spiral of depression simply because it permitted us the invaluable opportunity to express our innermost thoughts and feelings about our own troubles when we were growing up. And later on, when we were actually able to combine journaling with reading inspirational books, our lives, they would just change forever. And then once we've had kids of our own, it really put into perspective what's important in life. And so we set about creating a journal which we hope would one day help our own children and potentially help us to fulfill a dream of our own of helping others to escape the treadmill of self-doubt and depression and simply bring out the best in others.
Well, Caroline, why don't you add to that?
Mm-hmm. Yes, our main message is to teenagers is that we were there once too, and we understand what it feels like to go through difficulties. And the tendency when you're a teenager is to withdraw. And the main thing that we wanted to teach is that we learned through difficulty to withdraw into our strengths. That's not something that you can do very easily. It's something that you learn to do, and we learn to do it through journaling. So you can easily withdraw into your own room when you're a teenager and withdraw into self-pity or depression or negative thoughts or listening to what other people are saying to you, or you can go into your room And in the quiet, you can withdraw into that little voice, that strength that slowly comes out as you practice more positive choices, or just a more positive way of looking at yourself, of thinking about yourself. Mm. So that's our main message, that it's just through that daily quiet practice of doing that you can really overcome some of life's bigger challenges.
And Kelly Lee, in today's technological world where teenagers have so many gadgets to occupy their time, this kind of breaks that cycle, doesn't it? Gets them into the real meaning of life.
It sure does. And I mean, today, actually physically writing in a journal would be, you know, some might consider antiquated. And okay, sure, this is a process that you could actually extend to doing on a computer. But that physical process of actually writing down your thoughts and emotions, that cathartic, very therapeutic process, focuses consciously on your thoughts, emotions and experiences, and it enables you to express them with honesty, because you don't have to worry about what other people are thinking or judging you or, you know, criticizing what you're saying. It just enables you to have control that's otherwise lacking. When you're writing down what's really going on, whatever is stressing you, it's actually shown to improve your mental health and your sense of well-being, because it's enabling you to work through issues, not to just focusing on your computer and all the distractions that are going on there, and your phone too. It doesn't enable you to just stop and concentrate on what is really bothering you or what things you need to work through in your life to move forward and progress to a happier place and be living a life that is feeling more fulfilling.
Well, what I love about this book, your journal, My Journal, My Friend, it's not just a bunch of empty pages. It actually is a guided journal, as you put it. And you give some direction, you give some philosophy, some ideas, and then you help them, you prompt them. That is a very, very different approach. You prompt them with maybe a little question or an open-ended statement, right?
Yes, we do.
Absolutely.
Yes. And it's hoped that just those little prompts will be the impetus to get them really thinking on a deeper level about what's actually happening in their life. Because no matter what is going on in your life, and even though when you're a teenager and you feel like you've got so many rules and everything placed upon you, you still have choices to make every day within those limitations. So no matter whether you're feeling oppressed by having rules and things put upon you at school by your teachers or your parents, or even if it's your peers and the people at school that are giving you perhaps a tough time or trying to steer you in a certain direction, each and every day you have a choice about where your life is headed. And what we're trying to emphasize is exactly that you still have choices. So even when teens feel like, well, I don't have a choice, I'm told what to do all the time, well, actually, they have a choice about whether they're going to choose happiness and to choose to follow a positive direction in life, or whether they're just going to go with whatever stream that they're in at school or however they're being directed by their parents. So, yeah, we're just hoping that something within the journal will trigger that idea that they are empowered by their ability to choose and to feel really positive and grateful for having those choices.
Caroline, how will My Journal, My Friend help parents?
Absolutely, yes. The book appeals to parents of teenagers because it touches on a lot of the topics that are difficult to open up. So topics such as teen sex, drugs and alcohol, And we have another topic in there called When the Going Gets Tough, which is really looking at when life is really getting tough and teenagers starting to think about, the dreaded word of suicide or just generally going down that path or even thinking about that. So that's where it helps parents. It opens up the conversation between them and their child, and also give them some practical measures about how they can open that conversation with their teenager and how they can direct them to start those important conversations. So it does offer, it is for teenagers, but it subtly provides an adult perspective on these range of issues.
Yes, this guided journal again has instruction, inspiration, and then these open-ended statements, and of course some blank pages where the teenager then can express themselves in hopefully in very deep ways. Now let's talk about some of these topics, Kelly Lee. For example, of course, a very important one. You've touched on it a little bit. Self-worth.
Yes. So each of the topics that are included are there to get them thinking in another way. And self-worth, what that goes over is thinking about things like how you talk, your inner dialogue, how you speak to yourself, how you consider yourself, because it affects, those things affect the choices that you make in life and therefore the direction that you take in life. So if you've got a good, healthy sense of self-worth, you're going to consider the direction that you're going in life. You're going to, even though you might have peer group pressure or, pressures upon you to take a certain direction in life, if you've got a strong sense of self-worth and you are going to choose what is right for you, and you are going to stop and think about how you know those choices are right for you, because you're concentrating on whether or not you're in a positive state of mind and you feel excited about what you're doing in life, or whether you're just following the crowd, basically. And that's where I think kids end up into a lot of trouble these days, because they're just not thinking about the ultimate outcome of the choices that they're making. So the bottom line is that if we have kids that have got a good sense of self-worth, they are going to be more likely to stand up to peer group pressure, and instead of just going along with that peer group pressure, because it's the easy thing to do.
Other topics for contemplation each month, as you put it, growing pains, relax, life is full of choices. Caroline, tell us about this one, When the Going Gets Tough. Teenagers don't want things to be tough. I don't think adults do either, but boy, we need to train them early, don't we?
We do. And basically, When the Going Gets Tough, the topic talks about those times in life where you can't feel positive. You try, but nothing seems to work, and what you can do in those times. And we have a range of tools or tips for when those moments come, and whether that message is simply that this will pass, sharing that thought on that particular day that, yes, it feels bad right now, but it will pass. And for all you know, the best is yet to come. The best is ahead of you. And if you can just wait out this time, things will turn around, and very gently and slowly you can turn those tough times around. So it's just reassuring teens that when things do feel really bad, and when they're feeling as though nothing they do is going to work, those are the times where they need to stop, breathe, spend that time on their own, feeling what they're feeling, but knowing that it will pass, that there's more out there for them. And the journal, that's why we've called it My Journal, My Friend, because it's in those times that they need that friend to be there with them all the time. So we're hoping that the journal will provide that ongoing support and friendship, especially during those tough times.
Other topics, setting goals, empathy, Kelly Lee, we've got about a minute. Why don't you talk about gratitude, a powerful state of mind?
Yes, gratitude and realizing all the gifts that you have in your life right now. I mean, it doesn't matter how elaborate or how simple that your life is, there's always something to be grateful for. So it's reaching for what is positive in your life and what is positive about life that will help you to make positive choices and to feel good about yourself and feel good about the potential of your own life. So I think it's gratitude and especially empathy. If you don't mind me touching on empathy quickly, empathy is just an enormous issue that we really need to think about in this day and age, because we find ourselves in a situation where we've got ridiculous cases of bullying and teens getting bashed up and all sorts of things happening, which it feels like it's a downward spiral, and it must be just dreadful for people that are actually living in those situations or know somebody that is actually living in that situation. And if we all had empathy, where we're able to look at try and put ourselves in another person's shoes, then we would have that those incidences would either not occur at all, or it'd be a huge reduction in the amount of incidences. So I think that having gratitude for the wonderful life that we all have and the ability that we have to choose in our life, and also looking at how we are affecting people around us and having empathy for how we are treating others and just trying to be the best people that we can be, that can only lead to living a far more fulfilling and happy life.
The title of the book, My Journal, My Friend, A Journey of Self-Discovery and Inspiration, and the author is Kelly Lee Jackson with co-contributor Caroline Schar. Kelly Lee, tell us how to get your book.
You can get our book through Balboa, or you can get it through Amazon or Barnes & Noble. So if you just have a look on the net, you'll be able to find it.
Well, thank you both for being with us on Indie Book Publishing, this special interview brought to everyone by Balboa Press. Thank you, Kelly Lee.
Thank you so much for having us. Thank you for your time, Steve.
Thank you, Caroline.
Merry Christmas to everyone, too. Sorry.
Thank you. Yes. Thank you.
Merry Christmas to you as well, and a great, great book to help us, especially start this new year. Thank you, Vo. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Steve.
You're listening to Indie Book Publishing, and we'll be right back after these messages.
Get ready to live La Bella Vita with Dawn Catherine on Toginet.com. Live La Bella Vita. If you're wanting to know all the beauty tricks of the trade and the latest fashion trends before everyone else, this is your show. If you admire celebrities' beauty and their fashion sense, this is your show. Do you love wine and want to know more about the process it takes to make wine from the vine to the bottle? This is your show. Live La Bella Vita. For more on the show and your host, check out our website, labellavitacosmetico.com. This is the kind of show you can sink your teeth into. If you enjoy traveling and food and family, all with an Italian flair, then you can live La Bella Vita with your host, Dawn Catherine. Wednesday nights at midnight, 11 p.m. Central on Toginet.com.
Mark Lipinski is coming to Toginet. It's Creative Mojo with Mark Lipinski, a live two-hour show Wednesday afternoon starting at 3, 2 Central on Toginet.com. Creative Mojo. It's fun, entertaining, informative, inspirational, and illuminating. Lipinski has worked on such shows as Oprah, The View, The Joan Rivers Show, and Ricky Lake. He's busy, but he's got the drive to share with Creative Mojo, dedicated to the modern crafter and crafting lifestyle. Dive into the info and enjoy everything from celebs to entertainment news to recipes, quilting and needlework,
knitting, painting, woodworking, Christmas crafts, and so much more. This show boldly encourages you to discover and harness your own creative spirit by living creatively every day. For more on Mark and the show, check out marklipinski.com. Don't miss the fun. It's Creative Mojo with Mark Lipinski, Wednesday afternoon starting at 3, 2 Central on toginet.com.
Welcome back to Indie Book Publishing, helping authors publish, promote, and sell their books around the world. Now, back to your host, Steve Jorgensen.
The title of the book, Joshua's Atlas, and the author is Gerald T. Dale. And Jerry joins us now on Indie Book Publishing, this interview brought to you by Trafford Publishing. Hello, Jerry.
Hello, Steve. Thank you for calling.
Well, this is really fascinating science fiction because we're all so fascinated with UFOs and aliens, and they could be among us right now and we wouldn't know it. And that's kind of the way your book, the whole setting of the book, the plot to save the Earth. Joshua, the main character, he's built this flying car that looks like a normal vehicle. And my goodness, if we saw it, what would we think? We would probably think it's a UFO. And then, of course, there are these aliens from the planet Zabia that have a altruistic purpose. They want to help, but there's some complications that your book goes into where makes it very difficult for them. At the same time, the Earth is headed in the very dangerous direction, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
And I mean, we could see that today. I mean, this isn't just fiction. This is reality with all this wars all over the Earth. Seems to be growing and growing, doesn't it?
Yes, it does. Probably much of it unbeknownst to us.
So, Jerry, what's your fascination with UFOs and aliens, the possibility of aliens being here? Tell us about the motivation for writing this book.
Well, I feel that aliens have provided much to this world that we are unaware of in the past, and to present, and it will in the future, I'm sure. And their participation has contributed a great deal to our progress on Earth.
Now, do you think space aliens are a threat to us?
I do not think they're a threat overall. I don't know what it would be if on an individual basis. But overall, I feel that they are interested in our progress.
So they want the Earth to progress in the most peaceful way. That's your belief.
That's my belief.
Well, let's talk about Joshua. Let's start out. He is the main character. Tell us about this incredible, I guess he's a scientist, Joshua.
No, he's works, his business is over the road salesman, and he finds that he's on the highway a great deal, and much of his driving time is consumed by traffic jams and accidents and what, and he tries to invent something that would help him in those cases. Thereby, he eventually invents Bernie. Bernie is the name of the he adapts for his creation, his car, and it flies.
Well, that we certainly, I think all of us would love to have that kind of invention today, a car that flies. But of course, there's some big questions about, if the average person sees this, what would they think?
They would, of course, assume that it's beyond Earth's technology, that they probably space aliens were using this as an introduction or insertion into the Earth's population, and there would just be a big question about it.
So he has to be very careful.
Yes. His the main part of the book is his security and his keeping the his personal identification free of all of releasing that. Yet he's still working within society on an individual basis.
How does he meet these aliens from Xabia. Is it Xabia, or how do you pronounce
Xabia.
That?
Xabia.
Xabia. How does he meet them, and why does he meet them?
Well, he has gone through some public, the media has announced his some aliens and so forth. They have picked up on the story. And he's one time working in his shop when two of these aliens show up and try to describe to him that they are in fact aliens and that their craft has been destroyed. And they would ask Joshua if he could deliver them to their home base, somewhat 260,000 miles straight up. And he eventually agrees.
So his invention can do that.
His invention, with a little bit minor changes of their technology, so that he can go through the lack of atmosphere and deliver it to. Yes, his craft will work just as well outside of an atmosphere as within.
Now, often when we hear the word alien, especially space alien, it's in a very negative way. It's in a scary way. We have great concerns. Tell us about these people.
Well, these people have described to Joshua, in order to get him to agree to his help, they've described that they are here on a mission to help Earth. There's an upcoming event that could lead to apocalypse, and they're trying to see Earth around this problem that they don't even know about. And to avoid this event coming up, this event would eventually lead to returning to the Stone Age for mankind, as it has in the past that we know as Atlantis, and that story that's evolved from that.
So the Earth is on this dangerous path that's going to lead to self-destruction of the Earth and change everything.
Yes, that's the story.
Now these Xabians, they're here to help us, and there's quite a few of them.
Yes, as a matter of fact, the Xabians have installed 1 million members, their volunteer members, into society to try to teach us and provide ways for us to learn how to get around this problem that's developing that Earth does not know anything about. Now, first of all, they cannot tell any member of Earth that they're here, because they themselves want Earth to prosper on their own and not be directed by any foreign intelligence. So they're restricted to very much security around themselves.
So they have guidelines that they must follow. They can't change history.
They cannot. That's the main part.
But a great unexpected phenomenon develops.
Yes, suddenly there is a disease that causes them to lose their memory. There is a complete amnesia to their original purpose, and they are now on Earth as a common person with the all of the greed and whatever that people feel here on Earth, going about their business, and they have completely forgotten their original purpose.
So Joshua now has a new mission.
They have asked Joshua that if they have created a cure for this disease, but they cannot are not allowed under their laws to administer it. They ask Joshua if he can administer this cure to as many of their people as possible, thereby putting them back to work and eventually hoping that they can still avert this tragedy that's developing.
What is the power source of these Xabians?
they have their own power, and I consider that their power would be in the line of handling gravity in a way that we know nothing about. I think that they, on their craft, could have, like, the best example would be a radio, and they would turn on the station, which would be Mars or Jupiter or some other planet, turn up the volume, and suddenly the gravity from that planet pulls them, their craft, their everything about the machinery toward them, and they would not feel any type of force in the change of direction that we feel with our craft.
Now, you also wonder that either why we haven't developed this kind of technology, or do you think we're working on such technology? You know, often sci-fi writers like yourself are ahead of what's going on, or are by accident telling what's going on.
Well, I think this would be possible, but of course, it's technology that is far in the future for us. And we just haven't developed anywhere near that technology as of today.
And, of course, the Air Force is very concerned about this flying car. Of course, they don't know it's a flying car.
First of all, they don't know but that there is only one flying car. And their concern is that it's alien and that they... first of all, would like to protect their citizens, and second of all, they would like to gather the technology that is involved with this flying car for their own purpose.
Now, is this Colonel Morrison, Milton P. Morrison, is he a good guy, or has he got other kinds of sides to him?
No, Morrison is in the Air Force, and he is in charge of a squadron that is pursuing Joshua in many cases. He is not a villain. I actually have no villains in the book, except that they are doing their job of protecting Earth, and they are unaware of Joshua's complete story.
And then there's Annie. Tell us about Annie.
Annie is Joshua's girlfriend. And eventually he marries her, but she is not allowed to know anything about it because she's another Earth citizen. And, of course, Joshua cannot allow this information to get out in any way, so he tries to keep it from Annie as well.
And, of course, along the way, Joshua becomes entangled with the lives of fellow citizens. He helps a 4-year-old boy and his dog.
Yes, this is just one of the events that come up with Joshua that he encounters, and he still has to maintain his secrecy about himself.
And he helps, as you put it, a destitute waitress whose main concern is her young son, and he even helps the President of the United States.
Yes, he gets confirmation from the president that should his work help, that he was going to see to it that Earth and his portion of it backs up the peace that is Joshua was trying to develop.
One of the messages of your book is about unity among Earth's people and what that would do for us.
I feel that Earth, particularly within the United States, people are so divided that it causes a problem on its own. And if we all work together, we could advance much quicker. We would, for example, health. If we didn't have to encounter all the problems that they have today between the people, their health could develop much faster.
And you're also concerned about all the wars.
Wars are a big problem. Certainly in the past, they've controlled population and so forth. But it is, again, a diversion from what Earth people could actually accomplish should they be able to concentrate on the important aspects of gaining knowledge.
Joshua's Atlas, fascinating book of sci-fi with some implications that in a lot of ways may reflect today's news. Perhaps it's a stretch to talk about aliens helping us, but what do you think? You think they're here now, really, in reality?
I think they're here. It would be, assumed if they weren't, it would be a stretch on our part. We're here, and we only know about Earth. We can't say anything about any other planet, and why wouldn't they? I believe that they're here. We're much like, you might say, an ant farm that a child would have, just finding out what happens within the society of ants that drives them. And I think that's what space aliens are doing in respect to us.
The title of the book, Joshua's Atlas, the author, Gerald T. Dale. Jerry, tell us how to get your book.
Book, you can get it through Trafford Publishing itself. You can get it on Amazon, Barnes & Noble. It's on e-books. And you could go to any bookstore and request the book, and they would get it for you.
Jerry, thanks for being with us on Indie Book Publishing and this interview brought to everyone by Trafford Publishing. Thank you, Jerry.
Thank you, and thank Indie Books Publishing. Thank you very much.
You're listening to Indie Book Publishing, and we'll be right back after these messages. Want to be challenged in a powerful way to leap beyond what you think is possible? Then join us Mondays for the Leah Jansen Show, every Monday at 10 a.m., 9 a.m. Central on TogiNet.com with Leah Jansen. Listen live as life coach Leah uses her coaching skills to give you the tools you need to take action and create momentum. You are encouraged to call in and share your greatest fears, challenges, and obstacles, and then listen as Leah obliterates those barriers to success. For more on Leah and the show, check out her website, leahjansen.com. That's Leah, LEAHJANTZEN.com. Spend 1 hour with Leah, and you'll be captivated by her energy, enthusiasm, and magnetism. You'll quickly become addicted to her positive attitude and make-it-happen mentality. Ready for a life-changing, mood-altering show? Then get ready for Leah Jansen. And listen live to The Leah Jansen Show every Monday morning at 10 a.m., 9 a.m. Central on TogiNet.com.
People think I've made it. I'm popular. I seem happy all the time. I have great clothes and I'm involved in everything. But I have questions, doubts, and fears, just like every other teenager. That's why I'm glad for Teen Talk Radio, where it's all about choices.
Join us for Teen Talk Radio with Nicole O'Dell, Thursday nights at 10, 9 central on TogiNet.com.
The choices we have to make that can alter the course of our lives. Life is too much pressure if we try to go it alone. I tune in to Teen Talk Radio with Nicole O'Dell every week to get reminded that I'm not alone. Nicole O'Dell is an expert on what happens in the lives of teenagers. Join her as she deals with topics like peer pressure, purity, drugs, alcohol, and many other things that might come up along the way. She writes books and speaks to people all over the place, but she says her favorite moments are when she can pull up a chair and chat with teens about what's important to us.
For more information on Nicole and her books, go to NicoleOdell.com. Then join us for Teen Talk Radio with Nicole O'Dell, Thursday nights at 10, 9 central on TogiNet.com.
Teen Talk Radio, where it's all about choices.
Welcome back to Indie Book Publishing, helping authors publish, promote, and sell their books around the world. Now, back to your host, Steve Jorgensen.
The title of the book, Junkie Meets Jesus. And the author is Colin Garnett. And Colin joins us now on Indie Book Publishing. This interview brought to you by Balboa Press. Hello, Colin.
Hi, Steve. Hi, good afternoon.
Well, great to have you with us all the way from South Africa. It sounds like we're right in the same studio with each other. The magic of technology brings us together.
Wonderful.
Well Colin, before we get into the details of your book, I'm just going to read a little so everyone understands the profound story that this is. Your story, the title sums it up, Junkie Meets Jesus. But you say this, that you grew up in Stockport, South Manchester, in a tough working class culture. And you had a teenage involvement with alcohol, amphetamines, and violence that led to an adult heroin addiction. And for many years, you were lost in crime, drugs, lifestyle, and you even did time in 27 different English prisons and two military prisons. And then in 1993, you turned to God with a very heavy heart, and you received Jesus, and your whole life was changed. You were transformed, and you've become a highly effective evangelist with a very powerful ministry to those in prison and to their families. So, first of all, congratulations for the just a miraculous turnaround in your life.
Thank you. I must be honest, I have difficulty taking any credit for it. It really was an absolute miracle. The terminology, I received Jesus, I was overwhelmed by his love, Steve. I was simply overwhelmed. Yes, I received the truth of who he is, and the truth of that God is who he says he is, and he's not who I want him to be. I kind of, in my point of brokenness, that's what I accepted. And his love just overwhelmed me. It was impossible to resist. To resist was just not an option. It wasn't even a choice.
Well, today you run a recovery home, and we'll get in more about that. But let's go back. Let's go way back to your early beginnings. And for most people, they would say, what happened, Colin? You were raised in a very strong, solid home.
We had a fantastic home life, Steve, you know, comparatively. I mean, we were poor. I didn't realize we were poor until I started to branch out into the world a little bit later on in life. But when I think back now to where we were from and the number of broken families that lived around us, we had a really close, safe home to come home to. There was lots of laughter, lots of fun, never any kind of physical violence. And Dad loved Mum, and Mum loved Dad. And there's no rhyme or reason to why I should not fall off the straight and narrow, jump off the straight and narrow. Wasn't interested.
Yeah, you jumped right off the cliff, and your dad was a great role model to you, wasn't he?
Well, he was a fabulous man. And the longer he's been gone, and the further I get away from my childhood, I look back and I can actually see myself applying the same principles with my two young children now. And they're solid. They're solid. The ethics that he instilled into us, and the degree of morals, none of us were perfect. They didn't expect perfection. They were just, all they asked for really was an open mind and an honest heart within the home. And to the best of my ability, that's what I sincerely tried to do that. But for some reason, I was unable to be completely honest about who I was, even in the home, and about how I felt in the home. I felt like a lodger. Despite all the evidence and all the love and all the safe touch and the embrace from Dad every night and the grooming from Mum, I honestly, from somewhere deep within me, I felt like I was in the way.
It's hard to put your finger on it then. It's hard to really understand why you rebelled.
Now, once again, in with the big picture, it was all for a purpose and all for a call. And as I've said many times, I would go through the same again to get to where I am.
Well, you were in a Catholic school, of course, run by nuns, and you had a hard time with that kind of direct control that often these Catholic schools use, right?
Yeah, they scared me. They intimidated me. I wanted so much for them to be something else. I wanted so much for them to be godly and what I thought godly meant. And it wasn't like that. They were cold. They were distant. And one of them, I know it takes two to tango, but around about the age of 7 or 8, one of them physically assaulted me, which was par for the course in those days. It wasn't wrong for school teachers to give the children a clip around the ear when they stepped out of line. And I stepped out of line more than once. But this lady actually stuck the lead of her pencil into my forehead with this really vindictive tone. She was saying, why can't I get through to your thick head? Yeah, I just snapped.
Yeah, and that's where you said enough is enough, and you never came back.
No, no. I can remember, I can crystal clearly remember thinking that I told this lady where to get off. I left her in no doubt as to my feelings, and I stormed out of the classroom. And on my way down the stairs, I sat down on the stairs, and I realized that it felt to me as if I just told one of God's immediate secretaries or one of God's personal assistants where to get off. And in my heart, right in my heart then at that point, I said in a childish, hurt way, I just said to God right then, if she belongs to you, I'd rather go to hell with hypocrites. I'd rather go to hell with friends than to heaven with hypocrites. I said, I don't want it. Keep it. Thanks, but no thanks. And I ran into the arms of the world, basically, at the age of probably about 7 or 8. And from that point started forgery, writing letters from my parents to the school. I wasn't there, and I mustered my parents' signature. Yeah, I was going to be naughty.
Well, how did your parents deal with this? Were you on the run then, from then on?
I wasn't. I spent about 7 or 8 weeks on the run. Not on the streets. I was going home at night, and then I was getting up for school in the morning, and then just ducking off into the fields to play football and going stealing fruit from the apple trees in various farms and just getting up to general mischief. Mum and Dad really didn't have a clue. They didn't have any idea. So when it did come to the light, it was the last thing they were expecting. I think it took them so by surprise they didn't know how to deal with it. It was the disappointment. They were terribly, terribly disappointed. And, you know, I wasn't very honest with my emotions at that time anyway. I wasn't able to express my emotions at that time anyway. And when I saw the disappointment in my parents, it put me in touch with my emotions. And I couldn't deal with them, Steve. I didn't know what to do with them. They felt wrong. My feelings felt wrong, so I just cut off from them. I didn't know how to express them. I didn't know how to voice them. Nobody ever taught me to voice them. Nobody ever said it's okay to be not okay. Nobody ever said, you know, you can be hurt and you can be shy and you can be sensitive. We just didn't talk like that where I came from. It was
right.
A tough, tough neighborhood.
So you took to self-medication, I guess, trying to deal with all this pain.
I did, yeah, I did, and I found it very comforting to begin with. To begin with, it was just with cigarettes and cider. We used to get a bottle of cider between about 6 or 7 of us, and we'd all have 5 or 6 mouthfuls of from the cider, and everybody felt better. And we were all doing the same thing. There must have been two-thirds of where I came from, two-thirds of the district that I grew up on, self-medicated. Now, looking back, everybody drank at the weekend. They didn't just drink at the weekend, they got drunk at the weekend. That was just the way. I didn't know there was another way. And so we kind of picked up on that when we were young, and we set out how we thought we had to carry on.
And then you were kind of on the fast track to some very serious hard drugs like heroin.
Yeah, there was a twisted attraction within me towards it, Steve. I remember a headline on the news. On the Manchester Evening News, and this newsreader was talking about a heroin overdose that took place in a drug orgy within the middle of Manchester. And I really liked the sound of it. This guy died from a heroin overdose. And everybody was disgusted and everybody was breathtaking and disappointed. And I was intrigued by it. I thought, I like the sound of that. I liked the way people reacted. It was as if, now I know I can get all the attention I want. I know how to get attention.
And so you got attention so much, you were in 27 different English prisons and 2 military prisons, I guess, for all kinds of different crimes.
Yeah, mainly fraudulent crimes. It was just about getting the daily batch of heroin.
So you had to steal and do anything you could to get the money to buy the heroin?
Anything. I was fortunate in that it was only confined to stealing. And, you know, there was that nice, I knew I was going against everything my family stood for, even in the depths and the darkness of my heroin addiction. And I knew this is not how I'm supposed to be. I knew it was wrong. But I couldn't stop. Everything within me wanted to stop. And every promise I made to my family, I believed that I was the person in my promises. But I couldn't, it just would not go away. And the longer I tried to not use, the more the urge was to use. And each time I failed, I felt worse. And the worse I felt, the more I used. And the more I used, the more I had to steal. And it becomes a self-sustaining ecosystem. The worse it gets, the worse it gets. And in the beginning, I was scared that the heroin addiction was going to kill me. And then towards the end, I was scared that it wasn't going to kill me.
And then on the 17th of June, 1993, in a prison chapel, you had a miraculous experience.
It was unbelievable. And I choose my words. It really was. And oftentimes, even now, even today, it still is unbelievable. It's particularly in an age of cynicism. I was converted, Steve. I wasn't supposed to be going to that chapel that evening. It just so happened that I went to the chapel, and as I walked into the service, there were maybe between 15 and 20 gangsters in there, some hard-looking criminals there. And I just sat in the corner, and I walked over to the corner in my special way and acknowledged them with my special gangster signs. But these guys weren't responding. They were just sat quietly chatting. And then one of them stood up and started to sing. And he just started to sing Majesty. And I felt like crying. As soon as I heard him sing, I saw for the first time that this guy wasn't singing about God. He was singing to God. And I really got the sense that I was getting left behind here. I don't fit in here. And then the rest of the convicts joined in, and it was rapturous. It was the closest. Even now, even today, I can, when I think back to what happened in that prison chapel that night, I can miss it. I miss, from my point of conversion, from the 18th of June onwards, I was converted on the 17th of June. But from the 18th of June onwards, my prison cell was my sanctuary. It was a wonderful place to be. It was just me, and it was just the Lord, and it was the Word of God. I miss it now. I don't get that that holy isolation anymore. The phone never stops ringing now.
Well, you've become a very highly effective evangelist, a powerful ministry to those in prisons and to their families, those trapped in addictions, and to the hearts and minds of developing youth. Tell us about the Bethesda Recovering Homes of South Africa, what you have built.
Yeah, my wife and I married a South African lady, and she's actually an attorney by trade. She graduated law school many, many years ago, and we met 10 years ago. And as we met 12 years ago, got married 10 years ago, and it was just heavy on my heart that the South African drug scene was seriously lacking adequate therapy. I was listening to headlines, I was listening to the news clips and reading in the newspapers what was going on in the rehabs. And it all made sense because these guys are fresh out of apartheid, and they didn't have drug and alcohol problems up until 1993 in South Africa. And I set my standards by the European clinics. So the burden on my heart never went away. So I just said to my wife, Diana, I thought I'd give this a try. If it doesn't work, it doesn't work. Nothing ventured, nothing gained. So we sold our house in Cape Town, plowed everything we had into a lodge in a village just near Port Elizabeth, and set up the internet, set up the beds, got the plates out, got the tables out, got everything in place, and then started marketing. And within 6 months, we'd taken in about three or four people. And then it seemed like all of a sudden we started to get quite a steady influx. Now we've got people in from Nigeria, Holland, Germany, England. We've had several in from America, a couple from Australia. It's www.bethesda4recovery.com. And I think the picture of Deanna having the law degree and myself having the degree in theology, that's the difference we make. We've got the balance of the legal side of things, to walk with integrity and professional integrity, and then we can also bring in the spiritual dynamic. And on top of that, there's my addiction experience as well. And I've honestly seen thousands and thousands of lights come on in thousands and thousands of eyes. And I know once that light comes on, it never goes out.
Well, that's so exciting, Colin. Again, we congratulate you and we honor you for what you've done. I know you honor Jesus and your God,
yeah.
But you're still the one who decided after you had this experience to move forward.
Yeah.
So the title of the book, everyone, is Junkie Meets Jesus, and the author is Colin Garnett. Colin, tell us how to get your book.
It's available at the moment on Amazon.com through Balboa Press.
And also, I'm sure we can learn at Bethesda4Recovery.com.
Yeah, that's our little facility. It would be nice to maybe form some kind of connection with other rehabs in America. Maybe we can pass on a little bit of what we've got. Maybe we can glean a little bit of what they've got. We have to share what we've got, Steve. We can't keep this secret. We can only keep it if we give it away.
Well, good for you and good for everyone. And there is hope, everyone, even in these dark hours. There's always hope because of God, right?
Yeah, amen. Absolutely.
Well, thank you, Colin. Thank you so much for being with us on Indie Book Publishing, this special interview brought to everyone by Balboa Press. Thank you, Colin.
Thanks, Steve. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to Indie Book Publishing with your host, Steve Jorgensen. Join us again next week at noon Eastern as Steve interviews another great author.